All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So I want to first begin by thanking all of the sponsors of tonight's shiur, by thanking Avram and Shandy Kelman for sponsoring the shiur in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Avram's father, Jerome Kelman, Rafael Yechiel ben Avram, zichrono levracha, Joe and Galia Berry, in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Joe's brother, David Berry, David ben Yisrael, and Mayor Anita Gerstein and Moshe and Davida Trapper, the commemoration of the yahrzeit of their father, Yisrael Ashkenazi Azriel ben Elio. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamas will have an aliyah. All right, so we begin with number one. So remember, again, this week's Parsha Shlach. Of course, you don't have to use your imagination too much to figure out what we're going to focus on. So when looking at the episode of the Meraglim, so the Torah is defined by Dabar Shem Moshe Leimer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying the following, Shlach lecha anoshim. V'yasuas eres kinana sharanin osim l'bnei Yisrael. Ish echad l'matel v'asav tishlachu kol nosi bohem. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, remember, there are many sub-narratives that are unfolding over here. On the most basic level, remember the whole tension that exists within the Mefarshim as to whether or not the sending of the Meraglim was a good thing, sending of the Meraglim was not a good thing. Did HaKadosh Baruch Hu buy into this, not buy into it? Pshuto shel mikra, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, shlach lecha, sent for you. As far as I am concerned, God says, I'm absolutely satisfied with the land as is. I have absolutely no need for any kind of independent corroboration about the goodness, the beauty, the holiness of the land. But if you feel the need to somehow corroborate this particular goodness of the land, then fine, please, you go forward with it on your own. The Torah then goes on to discuss all of the different spies. Ve'elish Mosam, these are the names of the men that Moshe Rabbeinu sent. Lemate Ruvein Shemo Ben Zakor. And again, we're not going to go through all of this, but the Torah identifies the messenger, or the meragel, the spy, from each particular shevet. What I want to draw your attention to is number two. So remember again, one of the people mentioned in this list of Meraglim is a man by the name of Hoshea bin Nun. So Hoshea bin Nun is the Meragel, he is the spy for the tribe of Ephraim, or really better than spy is the word scout. He's the scout for the tribe of Ephraim, Hoshea bin Nun. The Torah then records a very interesting episode, which is Ve'elish Moshe Hashem Asher Shalach Moshe L'Saras Haaretz Vayikra Moshe L'Hoshea bin Nun Yehoshua. So something dramatic here happens. That's right before Moshe Rabbeinu went ahead and sends them out. So what occurs? Moshe Rabbeinu changes Hoshea bin Nun's name to Yehoshua. Now the truth is, we discussed this question last year as well. So bless you, we're going to revisit it and go back and take a different approach. But again, this is just strange. Why is it strange? Because remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu's entire approach to the Meraglim is not abundantly clear from this week's parsha. Does Moshe Rabbeinu support it? Does Moshe Rabbeinu? And that's what, remember, in Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu goes ahead and recounts the episode of the Meraglim, it's clear that Moshe Rabbeinu felt cornered and felt that he had no choice but to allow the dispatching of the Meraglim. But when one looks in this week's parasha, one doesn't see that Moshe Rabbeinu was under any level of duress to go ahead and send or not send. Yet he goes ahead and he sends. But to compound that, right before he sends, he changes Yehoshua, who's his right-hand man, he changes his name from Hoshea to Yehoshua. So we're going to try to explore tonight is why is Moshe Rabbeinu changing Yehoshua's name? What is the deeper meaning in the name change? And of course, as we do every week, what is the contemporary lesson for us? Because remember, the beauty of our Torah is that it's never just about understanding a pshat or an understanding in a pasuk. Everything in the Torah is meant to convey to us some deeper contemporary moral ethical message. So question number one is, why is the name change? Number two, what is the meaning of the name change? Number three, what is the meaning for us, the contemporary meaning of the name change? So we're going to go through, time permitting tonight, five different approaches. Take a look at number three. So the Chizkuni writes, the Chizkuni, as you'll see in just a moment, goes in a totally different direction than anyone else. And the Chizkuni writes, V'yesh mefarshim, shino shmo, al shehutzrach lios min amaraglim, ve'la'avor derech amolek, b'shem Hoshea. So the Chizkuni says something amazing. The Chizkuni says, remember, one of the nations that lived on the border of Eretz Yisrael was the nation of Amalek. Is this our first encounter with Amalek? No. Right? When did we encounter Amalek? Immediately upon leaving Egypt. Who was the one who led the war out? Who led the war against Amalek? Who led the battle of the Jewish army? Yehoshua. Remember, it was not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is perched on top of the mountain with his arms raised, with his arms down. Aaron on one side, Hur on the other side, and they're holding up Moshe Rabbeinu's arms. Yehoshua is the one who goes out to war, and ultimately says the Chizkuni something amazing. The Chizkuni says, and I didn't put this whole thing on the sheet, but the Chizkuni says that since the war with Amalek, there was, like, I guess what we'd call today, a bounty on Yehoshua's head. That Amalek wanted Yehoshua. So what was the problem? The problem was that if Hoshea, as he was known, went into Amalekite territory or tried to enter into Eretz Yisrael, what was Moshe Rabbeinu nervous about? He was nervous that someone would say, Hoshea, that name sounds very familiar. That's the guy who ultimately almost vanquished us. Okay, again, remember, it wasn't so long ago. A year earlier, and therefore Moshe Rabbeinu, in order to protect his most beloved disciple, changes Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. So according to the Chizkuni, no deeper meaning, don't describe, don't read too much into it. This is just simply Moshe Rabbeinu making a strategic decision to almost, it's like witness relocation program. But a little bit, he's not going into relocation. He's going into the thick of it, but that no one should know who he actually is. Moshe Rabbeinu changes his name. Fine. Number four, the Kliyakar. Kliyakar takes a dramatically different approach as well. I'm starting with the more out-of-the-box approaches, then we'll come back to the more well-known approaches. Right, it's the Kliyakar, and this again is amazing. V'yesh mefarshim. Lefi shahaya mishevet Yosef. Remember, so as we said before, Hoshea ben Nun is from the tribe of Ephraim. So remember, there is no tribe of Yosef. Rather, what happens, Yosef gets Pishnaim, Yosef gets a double portion, and one tribe of Yosef becomes a double portion of Ephraim and Manasseh. So writes the Kliyakar, Yehoshua ben Nun, or Hoshea ben Nun, is from the tribe of Yosef. And what did Yosef do? Shehevi dibas echav. Remember, what did Yosef do that got him into a lot of hot water? He tattled on his brothers, right? Again, without getting into the whole story, but Yosef sees things that his brothers are doing that to him looked wrong. Now, the truth is, the Gemara explains in reality, the Shvatim, the tribes, were not actually doing anything wrong, but again, it looked wrong to Yosef. So what did Yosef do when he saw his brothers doing something wrong? What did he do? Right? He tattled. He came to Yaakov, he said, Yaakov, look, your sons are doing A, B, and C. So listen to this. Alkin hayayare. Shelo yelech bederech zikano kimitamze lo hiskir bo lemate Yosef o begadi ben susi hiskir lemate Yosef. So listen to this. This is amazing. That says the Kliyakar, Moshe Rabbeinu was nervous about Hoshea ben Nun, and he was nervous that somehow he would speak negatively. This is amazing, by the way. Moshe is not concerned about the other spies. I just keep saying spies. Spies sounds so negative. The other Marad, he wasn't concerned about the other scouts. Who was he concerned about? He was concerned about Hoshea. He was concerned that perhaps, again, Hoshea would be the one who would see something negative in the land. He was concerned that perhaps Hoshea would be the one who ultimately saw something negative in his fellow scouts, in his fellow Meraglim, and that he would come back to deliver a disastrous report. Isn't that amazing? Why would Moshe be concerned that Hoshea ben Nun would come back with a negative report? Because unfortunately, that's what the Zayda did, right? That's what his great-great-grandfather did. His great-great-grandfather, Yosef, made a very big mistake. Remember, this was Yosef's big mistake, and this was part of Yosef's maturation process within Egypt, that Yosef had to learn the fact that what you see is not necessarily the reality. Moshe Rabbeinu was scared. Remember, Moshe Rabbeinu knows how fragile this whole process is, and if Hoshea ben Nun comes back and he says something negative, let's say he perceives something negative in the land, and he gives a negative report, or he sees something negative about the people, and he gives the negative report, it's going to turn the entire tide. Therefore, what does Moshe Rabbeinu do? He changes Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Again, the Yud on the most basic level representing the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the name of God, as if to give Yehoshua an extra measure, or Hoshea to give Hoshea an extra measure of Siyata Dishmaya, divine providence, divine strength, to keep him strong, that he should not revert back to the ways of Yosef. So writes the Kliyakar, Umashalo is Spalel Agadi. So if that's the case, then ultimately, again, why does Moshe Rabbeinu only daven for Yehoshua or for Hoshea? Why doesn't he also daven for Gadi ben Susi? Remember again, Gadi ben Susi is considered to be, he's the spy, he is the scout for the tribe of Yosef / Menasha. So if you're worried about the fact that the grandchildren have some of the midos of the grandfather, and just like the grandfather said negative things about other people, about other things, because he misperceived them, so if you're worried enough about Hoshea to change his name to Yehoshua. So why not also go ahead and daven for Gadi ben Susi? So writes Tikli Yakar something amazing. Ulai Chashav she'im zeh sheba mishevet Ephraim ha-godol mimenashe lo yishan es tafkido. He says, "Mimrashat mistama gama katan mimenu lo yidaber kinegdo ukvarnodu mibracho shayakov kisham sam lo chok lahakti meser frame lechol daber shibekdusha." All the fishenikra of Nasha. So again, Skliok gives an interesting answer. The Kliokar says, since Hoshea represented ultimately the tribe, or I should say the tribe of Ephraim, and Ephraim is considered to be the Bechor for Menashe, so if the tribal leader or the spy from Ephraim doesn't say anything negative, then what? Then the spy from Menashe is not going to say anything negative either. So again, another very novel approach, that here Moshe Rabbeinu, it's amazing, Moshe Rabbeinu is not concerned about any of the other spies. Instead, all Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned about is Hoshea ben Nun. Why is he concerned that Hoshea ben Nun is going to deliver a negative or disastrous report? Because he's an Enochel, he is a grandchild of Yosef. Yosef is the one who unfortunately delivered a negative report about his brothers. Moshe Rabbeinu is afraid that Hoshea is going to do the same. Therefore, adds the Yud to give Yehoshua an extra measure of divine support, divine strength, divine confidence. Take a look at number 5, the Svarno. So the Svarno says something a little bit different. The Svarno writes, he says, Vayikra Moshe Hoshea ben Yehoshua. And again, remember, I'm just pointing out, these first couple of approaches are totally disjointed approaches. They have nothing to do with each other. I'm just pointing out how there are such dramatically different interpretations as to this name change. Look at this Sfarno number 5. Vayikra Moshe lo Sheben and Yoshua. Amar, Shehaya noda b'shvoto l'ishchayel, u'b'shem Hoshea, v'zeh shenikra l'malo Yoshua, mipnei shemoshe Rabbeinu kara lo kach l'kavod, u'lehispalel alav shiyeh nosha, v'sheoshiyah achirim. So first of all, what this Sfarno introduces to us is something dramatically different, which is, see, here is the problem. It sounds like, when is Moshe Rabbeinu changing Hoshea's name? Sounds like the name change is happening over here in Parshas Shlach, in this week's Parsha. What's the problem? The problem is that Hoshea has already been referred to as Yehoshua many times earlier, which seems to indicate to us what? That the name change, although it is recorded here, in fact occurred earlier. And says the Sfarno, that is indeed the Pshat. Already early on, now again, when we don't know, but sometime earlier on, Moshe Rabbeinu already changed Hoshea's name to Yehoshua. Why? It was given as a kavod to Yehoshua. Adding an extra yud, ultimately again, was derech kavod, was a way of honoring Yehoshua, honoring Hoshea, and also to daven for him, that he should be saved, and that he should save others. So according to the Sfarno, changing Hoshea to Yehoshua has absolutely nothing to do with the Meraglim, nothing to do with the spies. It was an honorific title bestowed upon Yehoshua from Moshe Rabbeinu sometime earlier on, a show of kavod, a show of honor from Rebbe, from the master, to the Talmud, to the student, ultimately representing almost Moshe Rabbeinu's hope and aspiration for his beloved Talmud. I hope that you are able to be saved, saved yourself from all the difficulties, trials, and tribulations of life, and I hope that you are able to save others. The Rabbeinu Bechai continues the same idea. He says, if Moshe Rabbeinu was really changing Hoshea's name over here, so you have to ask a basic question, which is, how can you tell me that his name is being changed over here when what? When he's already been referred to as Hoshea earlier on in the Torah. Hushekasov, Umisharso Yehoshua bin Nun Na'ar. Torah already identified Hoshea as Yehoshua much earlier on. Uksiv Vayaka Moshe Vyoshe Misharso Vaya Yehoshua bin Nun Misharis Moshe. So Rabbeinu Bechai, again, supporting the Sfarno, that this name change did not take place here. It's being stated here for whatever the reason, but the name change, in fact, took place earlier. Chizkuni says, same idea, number 7, Vayikra Moshe lo Hoshea ben Yoshua, lo shekara after Yoshua. So Chizkuni says it explicitly. It doesn't mean that Moshe Rabbeinu actually changed Yoshua's name here. Elakacha perishu, shekara Moshe Yoshua kivar. Moshe Rabbeinu already changed Hoshea's name to Yoshua earlier on. Kishenaase misharso, when he first became his attendant, umatza chein be'enav, and ultimately again, he found favor in his eyes, shekein hu haminog, shekein matzinu ba'avram b'sara b'yakov, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, v'Azariah, tzidkia, shekvar shmo matanya, u'nechemia shenikra hatir shasa. So the Chizkuni again, so the Sfarno Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar and Chizkuni are all saying the same basic idea, which is that the name change did not occur here. It is recorded here, but it did not occur here. It occurred much earlier on. So what's the meaning of the name change? It's an honorific title. Moshe Rabbeinu is giving his Talmud Yehoshua Kavod by adding an extra yud to his name, representing a tefillah, an aspiration. You should be zochet to save others. You should be saved yourself, but has nothing to do with the Meraglim. One more piece, and then we'll bring it together. Look at number 8. So the Emes Liakar of Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says something so beautiful. He writes over here, look at number 8. Beirish Rashi Zal. V'nispalo Allah, Kol Shach Matz, skip a little bit. U'kvar Yidu HaMefarshim, Madua Lo Hispalo Moshe, Gam Al Kalev, actually, all right, I'll do this a little bit out of order. So, all right, I'm giving the... actually, no, hold on to it. We're not going to do this just yet. We'll wait a second. So remember, based on the first three interpretations we have, so here's what we know. Remember, we're trying to figure out why is Moshe Rabbeinu changing the name of Hoshea to Yoshua, and what's the deeper meaning of their names. So remember again, so far we have Chizkuni approached Amon, who says, just trying to shield Hoshea's identity. He's trying to protect Hoshea from Amalek. Hopefully the name change will throw Amalek off the trail of Yoshua, of Hoshea, and will not allow them to realize that this is the same guy who went out to war with them just a year earlier. Then we saw approach number 2, which was the Kli Yakar, that Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned about Hoshea. He's concerned that Hoshea is going to speak negatively either about the fellow spies or about the land. Why is he concerned about this? Because he's a grandson of Yosef, and unfortunately, again, Yosef made a catastrophic mistake when he spoke negatively about his brothers. We're concerned that the grandson may repeat the same mistake, adds the extra yud to Hoshea's name to give him chizuk, to give him strength. Sfarno, Rabbi Nebuchadnezzar, Chizkuni, all highlight the same basic idea, which is name change didn't happen here. Name change, in fact, occurred much earlier on. Why it's recorded here, no one seems to discuss, but it occurred earlier. And why was it done? It was a display of kavod and honor for Moshe Rabbeinu, for Yehoshua. And it was a tefillah for Moshe Rabbeinu to Yehoshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should take care of you, should guide you, should give you the strength to be saved and to save. Fine. Now we come to approach number 5. Again, we'll come back to the Emes Yaakov in just a little bit. Take a look at number 9. So the Gemara, of course, records the approach that most of us are most familiar with. And the Gemara writes, Yoshua kvar bikesh Moshe alav rachamim, shene emar, vayikra Moshe Yoshua benun Yoshua. Moshe Rabbeinu calls Hoshea benun Yoshua, and what's the meaning of why the extra yud? Ka Yoshiacha me'atzas miraglim. Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for Yoshua, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the Eitzah, from the council of the spies. Now, of course, what's terribly troubling about this is that it sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu already has almost like an inclination that what? That this is really going to go badly, which of course begs the question that if he thinks that it's really going to go terribly badly, then why go ahead and send them in the first place? But we'll leave that question on the side. In any event, Moshe Rabbeinu seems to have almost like a feeling that things are going to go south, and therefore he proactively davens on behalf of his Talmud, adding the extra yud, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the council of the Meraglim. The Medrash in number 10 quotes the same basic idea, L'Hoshea ben Yoshua, Melamed Shenispalel Alav Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Yoshua, V'Hosif Lo Os Achos Mishmo Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he went ahead and he added onto him an extra yud from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name, V'Amar, Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the council of the spies. Now, pause here for just a moment. Now you can go back to number 8. Just for, we're going to mix and match a little bit. So the Emes Liakov, Yaakov Kamenetsky asks, we're pausing on this, but the Emes Liakov says something very interesting. It's Perish Rashi's out, number 8. Nispalel Ka Yoshiacha Me'atzas Meraglim. Remember, according to Rashi, the extra yod is mamish a tefillah for Yoshua. It's a prayer. Yoshua, I'm nervous for you. And again, not like the Kli Yakar, that I'm nervous, Yoshua, what you're going to do. I'm nervous about your peer group. I'm nervous about these other Meraglim. I'm just not sure about their quality, not sure about their character. And therefore, again, I'm davening that you, Yoshua, ultimately be saved from their counsel. Asks the Emes Yaakov, Kivar hi iru ha-mefarshim, madua lo hispalel Moshe gam al-kolev, shelo yechata ba'asas Meraglim. Right, interesting. So if you go with this approach that Moshe Rabbeinu already feels that 10 out of these 12 guys, something's not going to go exactly as planned over here. But Moshe Rabbeinu is pretty solid. He's pretty sure that, but he knows that Yoshua and Kalev again are the good guys. So if he's davening for Yoshua, then what? why not daven for Kaliv as well? And the Emes HaKadosh gives an amazing answer. He says, Ve'efshar she'savar Moshe, she'kaliv shahaya nasui li'isha tzadekis kemo Miriam HaNaviah, batach lo yitpas ba'atas meraglim, ve'in lo zakok livracha. So this is something amazing, says Emes Yaakov. Was Yoshua married at the time of the meraglim? No, because we know, who does Yoshua marry? Yoshua marries Rachav, right? Whatever exactly her profession was, right? So he marries Rachav from the city of Yericho. He doesn't meet her for another 38 years, right? So ultimately, says the Emes HaKadosh, something absolutely amazing. Kalev is married, and he's married to Miriam. He's married ultimately to an Isha Tzadekis. He's married to a righteous woman. So Moshe says, you know what? If you're married to a righteous woman, apparently you don't need the brachas of Moshe Rabbeinu. But you know what? But Yoshua, who's single, Yoshua is not yet married, is much more impressionable, right? Doesn't really answer to a wife, and ultimately, again, is much more prone to get himself into trouble. Therefore, says Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua, you need my tefillah. So by the way, already now, even before we continue to go on, you already begin to see how the Torah, in its beautiful, nuanced ways, gives us such incredible, beautiful messages. That the Torah, in this simple name change, is telling us what? About the incredible power of a strong, holy marriage. That if you are rooted in a solid home, and especially again if one is privileged to have a righteous wife, you know, I always tell whenever I meet with Chasanim and Kalas, I always say that, you know, people often wonder, we have the minog, at least in Ashkenazic circles, we have the minog that the Kala comes to the Chuppah and she walks around the Chasan, the bride walks around the groom 7 times. So, right, people wonder, so why is it that the bride walks around the groom 7 times? Why doesn't the groom walk around the bride? Or why not, I don't know, 3.5 each, or 3 each, or 4 each? Why? So the answer is very simple. The Maharal explains this minog. It's already an old minog. The Maharal writes, because everyone knows, it is the woman who sets the tone of the home. It is the woman who creates the spiritual fabric of the home. If the woman is strong, the home is strong. If the woman's not strong, then the home, by definition, is deficient and can have, ultimately, its handicaps. So therefore, says the Emes HaKadosh, something so amazing. So I don't need to give Kalev a bracha, because Kalev has a strong wife. And when you have a strong wife, when you have a righteous wife, somehow, some way, you're going to be okay. By the way, we see this concept repeat itself over and over again, right? Where else do we see this? Sharon Abraham, good. That's always a good answer by husbands and wives, good. Where else? We see it next week. Oh, in Parshas Korach, right? Remember again, Chazal attribute. Correct. I didn't want to say that because I don't want to offend the ladies. But right, correct. Meaning, Chazal actually explained that the difference in the fate that Korach and On Ben Peles met was absolutely tied to the women who they were married to. So Mrs. Korach wanted covered just as badly as her husband. So she kept pushing and pushing and pushing, even at the point to ridiculousness. On Ben Peles' wife understood, she also knew how to speak to him, which was very important. She understood that this is craziness and it's not going to end well, and therefore she tells him to kind of pull back a little bit, and as a result, he survives. So this is just an amazing idea. So Yoshua's name's changed because he's single ultimately again. Therefore, again, he's much more prone to the influence of others, and therefore he needs the bracha. Kalev, a little bit more settled, married to a righteous woman, doesn't need the bracha. Okay, now back to our regularly scheduled program. So go back to number 11. So remember, so now what we have over here is the following. We're going with the approach that the extra yud is a tefillah from Moshe to Yoshua. Moshe is nervous about what Yoshua is going to do, or what Yoshua is going to be influenced. And therefore, Ka Yoshi'acha me'atzas miraklim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the counsel of the spies. So look what the Yerushalmi says, number 11. The Yerushalmi writes, Rav Huna b'shein. Now remember, up until now, in the Gemara Masechta Sota, in the Medrash, so the truth is, no one pays all that much attention to the Yud. Because what does the Yud represent? Name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, name of God. Okay, so fine, there are plenty of Yuds to go around. We can add on Yuds, we can add on Hays. We see that throughout Tanakh, that people get Yuds, people get Hays, people get name changes. Fine, not a big deal. The Yerushalmi, is very intrigued by the Yud. Why is he intrigued by the Yud? Because there are two names in the Chumash that are both changed by yuds, right? One loses a yud and one gains a yud. What are the two names? Sarai goes to Sarah and Hoshea goes to Yoshua. So Chazal feel that there must be some kind of connection between these two names. Look what Yerushalmi writes. Rabbi Huna b'shem Rabbi Acha, Yud Shanat la Kadosh Baruch Hu, Me'imenu Sarah. So look what Yerushalmi writes. the Yud that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took from Sari Imenu, listen to this. Now obviously, again, these Gemaras are not to be understood literally, or they need, literally, let me say this. If you want to understand literally, you can understand literally. They need not be understood literally, but just like, again, Medrash is allegory and metaphor in order to teach us lessons. Chazal do this as well in Gemara. So what did Chazal say? What happened when the Yud was taken away from Sari Imenu's name? Allah Yud, v'nishtateach lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'amar. So the Yud, apparently, that was taken from Sarai, is very offended. The Yud, apparently, Yuds have feelings also, and therefore the Yud comes before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'amar, ribono olamim, akartani minat tzadekes hazos. Ribono shalom, ze lo fair. Right, you took me, I was part of this beautiful name, a beautiful Sari Imenu. You took me from Sari Imenu's name, and now what? Now where do I go? So Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Tzei Lecha, don't worry. L'sha'avar ha'yisa, b'sof teva, chayechash aninosencha, b'rosh teva. So what does the Gemara say? How does HaKadosh Baruch Hu kind of calm down the Yud? He says to the Yud, don't get upset. Up until now, you're only at the end of a name. Right, you are Sarai, the last letter of the name. I'm going to take you, and what am I going to do? I'm going to put you where? In the beginning of the name. I'm going to put you in the beginning of the name. So therefore, again, writes the Medrash something, writes the Yerushalayim something amazing. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu calms the Yud by telling the Yud, I'm taking you again from the end of Sari Imenu's name, and I'm placing you again at the beginning of Yoshua's name. What's the problem? What's the problem? It's a very simple problem. What does this mean? Right? What are we talking about over here? Right? Suddenly Yuds are complaining. It's not fair. I got taken on this thing. Chesh Baruch is trying to appease Yuds. Clearly, what are Chazal saying? When you see something like this, does it literally mean that the Yud came before HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There are no Yuds before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? There are no letters coming to appeal because they were taken from one name and that. So obviously, what are Chazal saying over here? What Chazal trying to express to us, but they cloak it again in a storyline, in a narrative, is they're saying there is a connection between Sarai and Hoshea. There's a connection between Sarah and Yehoshua. What's the connection between these two people? So if you take a look at number 12, in the Sefer HaZnayim HaTorah of Sirotskin, says something very beautiful. He says, V'tzarech Iyun, Lama Bachru B'Hoshea Binun L'Hosif Lo Es HaYud. So now, let's take the Gemara's approach just a moment. That what happened, the Yud, again, not taking it literally, but somehow, that Yud that was uprooted from Sarah had to go somewhere. We want it to be part of someone's name. So why Yehoshua? Right? Why is Yehoshua the recipient for the Sari Imenu Yud? So look what he writes. He says, Shegaru Misarai V'yishlomar She'ayidei sheshinu eshma misarai lisara nolad la Yitzchak. Remember again, it was as a result of the name change from Sarai to Sarah, right? Her mazel changes as well, and she is privileged to have Yitzchak. Ve'adir chafzas Hashem haya shiyareish es kol eres Yisrael ukemash amra li Avram ki lo yirash es ben ha'amah hazos im bini im Yitzchak. So listen to this. So remember, what did Yitzchak represent? So remember, Avram Avinu was the one who was ultimately given Eretz Yisrael, but Yitzchak Avinu was the first one to, quote-unquote, inherit Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, our claim as to Eretz Yisrael as an inheritance is really an extension of Yitzchak Avinu. So Yitzchak was the one who first inherited Eretz Yisrael, and therefore again, umiloi cheftzazeh nimtzar li Yehoshua. So and it's very beautiful idea. There's an idea that says that what happens, it's the Yud that was taken from Sarai that allowed her to become Sarah, and once she became Sarah, that ultimately she was privileged to have a Yitzchak. And the greatness of Yitzchak is that he was the inheritor of the Abrahamic tradition, and specifically he was the inheritor of Eretz Yisrael. But you know what the amazing part with Avram and Yitzchak is? They both had title to Eretz Yisrael, but they did not have ownership to Eretz Yisrael. It's a very important yisod. They had title, but they didn't have occupancy or actual possession. Who was the one who actually established occupancy and possession of Eretz Yisrael for Klal Yisrael? Who was it? It was Yehoshua. So says the HaZnayim HaTorah, it's only appropriate that the Yud of Sarai ultimately makes its way to Yehoshua. because it's that yud says, it's almost like what the Islamic Torah says, that yud which represents Eretz Yisrael. That yud is the Yisrael. Ultimately, again, the beginning of the process of taking possession of Eretz Yisrael was with Yitzchak Avinu, and Sarai only had a Yitzchak once she lost the yud. That yud which represents Eretz Yisrael, the actualization of our destiny, is transferred over to Yoshua, because Yoshua is the leader who literally leads us into the promised land. Fine. But let's suggest another approach to this relationship between Yoshua and Sarah, or Sarai and Hoshea. Take a look at number 13. So if we go back all the way to Bereishis, we see something quite dramatically amazing. V'Sarai Eshes Avram, lo yolda lo. So remember, Sarai, already Avram and Sarah have been married for a while, and Sarai does not have children. But what happens? V'lo shifchas mitzis u'shma Hagar, but she has an Egyptian maidservant whose name is Hagar. V'tomer Sarai al Avram, because Baruch Hu has not given me, he's prevented me from giving birth. So marry my maidservant, and maybe you'll be built up through her. Avram calls Sarai, and Avram Avinu listens to Sarai, man of Sarai. Vatikach Sarai eshes Avram es Hagar hamitzris shivchasa mikates eser shalom l'shevs arberetz kinan. So Sarai takes her maidservant Hagar, at the end of 10 years after dwelling in the land of Israel, v'titein osa li'Avram isha lo li'isha. And ultimately, she gives Hagar to Avram Avinu as a wife. Look at number 14, the Ramban. So the Ramban says something like this. Ramban writes 14 Aleph. Lo amar akasa vaya askein, ela amar ki shama l'kol Sarai yimos, ki afa pi she'Avram is avim ma'od labanim, lo asa kein belo rishus Sarai. So first of all, this is a side point. How the Ramban points out that even though Avram Avinu wanted children very badly, he would never take a second wife had Sarah Imenu not suggested it. He would not have done that. He goes on, V'gam atalon is kavin shebanu mehagar, v'zar amenu, aval kavanos alasas ritzon Sarah, shetibana mimena, shiela nachas rach b'bnei shivchasa, ozichu shetiska hi labanam ba'avor, kein di rabbasin. Fine, so Ramban just comments over here on Avram Avinu's intentions. Avram Avinu wants children more than anything. He needs children because children represent his future. But yet, he doesn't really want to have them with a woman other than Sarai. But yet, Sarai says, take my maidservant. He figures perhaps this will make Sarai happy. She'll somehow self-actualize with the children of her maidservant. Look at paragraph Beis. V'omer ovatikach Sarai. Get ready. Lodia. Shalomir Avram ledaber ad shalokcha Sarai. V'nasna b'cheiko. V'hiskir akasav Sarai eshes Avram. Li Avram Isha. So what the Ramban points out is something amazing. If you go back to number 13 for just a moment, I apologize, I didn't include the English here, I'm sorry. If you look in 13, Pasuk Gimel, it says, Vatikach Sarai Eshes Avram. So Sarai, the wife of Avram, took Hagar the Mitzris, and she gave him to who? And she gave him to Vayitin Osa Li Avram Isha. So Sarai, the wife of Avram, took the maidservant and gave the maidservant to Avram, her husband. What's the problem? Why do I need this information? Right? It's obvious. I know that Sarai is the wife of Avram, and I know that Avram is the husband of Sarai. Why does the Torah have to state it? And the Ramban, look what the Ramban says, back to 14 Beis. He says, V'hiski akasov, second line in Beis, V'hiski akasov, Sarai eshes Avram, the Avram Isha, Lirmos, Kisara lo nisya'a shame Avram. Sarai Imenu, literally Nisyasha, did not give up hope on Avram. Velo hirchika atzma me'etzlo. And she did not distance himself from him. Ki hi ishto v'hi isha. Because she is his wife and he is her husband. Aval rotisa shetia gam hagar ishto. You know what Ramban is saying? Something amazing. One would have thought, if you were Sarai Imenu, so how would you be feeling right about now? How would you be feeling? Despondent, hopeless. After all, remember, the entire actualization of the Abrahamic promise is dependent on an heir, is dependent on a child, specifically a son. And the one thing Sarai Imenu cannot deliver is a son, is a child. So now we're up to the point where at this point in time, Avram Avinu has to marry his maidservant. So if your Sarai Imenu, says the Ramban, you could begin thinking to yourself, you know what? This is the end of the road. You know, Nebuch, all of my life dreams, everything I wanted. What, you know, if you ask Sarai Imenu, what do you want out of life? Sarai Imenu would answer, a child. That's all I want. That's all I want. He doesn't even have to be such a great Talmud Chacham, such a great, I'll take responsibility for making him great. I just want a child. And she has everything else. Like, she has a great marriage, a wonderful husband. She even has wealth. She has health, Baruch Hashem. Everything is, except she doesn't have the one thing she has in life. And finally, at this point in time, remember, when Sarai gives Hagar to Avraham, in her mind, there's no thoughts of Yitzchak. There's no thoughts of children of her own. For her, she figures, this is the end of the line for me. Well, if this is the end of the line, then my dreams will never materialize. But says the Ramban, that's not what Sarai does. Sarai says something amazing. She says, I will not give up on the dream. The dream is creating a monotheistic dynasty. The dream is perpetuating the Abrahamic tradition. The dream is to build the people who are Ovdei Hashem. I thought it was going to happen in a more natural way. I have a husband, we were going to have a son together, and together we will build this. Now I realize it's not going to happen the way that I thought it was, but I'm not going to throw in the towel. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to yield. Sarah Imenu, Sarai, is dedicated to a vision and dedicated to a goal no matter what. No matter how difficult it becomes, no matter how overwhelming it becomes, no matter how tragic, and these are tragic circumstances, for a woman never to be able to have a child thinking that this is the end of the line for her is absolutely unequivocally tragic. But Sarai Imenu says, no, we're altit ya'ish, we are not going to give up. I am your wife. You are my husband. We are still going to build this together. Granted, it's a little bit of a different way. Now there's this woman named Hagar here. It looks like she's going to bear the Abrahamic heir. So she's part of this equation as well. Fine, there's room for all of us. And together we're going to make something great. Ramban goes on. He says, furthermore, Rak ki isha nisu ala. For the moment, says Rama something amazing. The Ramban writes that Sarai Imenu gives Hagar to Avram as what? As an isha. Isha means a wife. Remember, in the biblical construct, there are two different relationships a man could have with a woman. A man could have a woman as a pilegesh, which I guess we loosely translate today as a concubine, which is still a marriage, but it's a marriage with more limited entitlements, versus a full-fledged wife. So Sarai Imenu could have easily given over Hagar to Avram as a concubine, as a pilegesh, and it would have accomplished the goal of ultimately producing a son, but that's not what she wants. We're going to do this in the right way. Avram, you're going to take Hagar as a wife, right? She'll be an equal to me. I'm willing to do that because that is what is healthiest for the home. That is what is healthiest for the future. That is what is healthiest for building a people. The Chozem Musar, Sarah, va'akavod shehino heges b'bayla. So says the Rabban something amazing. What is the greatness of Sarai Imenu? The greatness of Sarai Imenu is that she had commitment to an ideal, no matter how difficult the actualization of that ideal became. She was intent on accomplishing what had to be done. In her case, it was establishing a people. And establishing a people begins with Avram Avinu having a son. I wanted it to be from me. I had a conception of how it was supposed to be, how it was going to be. It didn't happen that way. So most people, what do most people do when life doesn't go their way? What do most people do? No one here knows, Baruch Hashem. But most people throw in the towel, right? You know what happens? Most people, when life doesn't go their way, they spend all of their energy wagging an accusatory finger heavenward, saying, it's not right. It's not fair. This is not how it was supposed to be. I deserve better. I dreamt better. I thought better. I should have better. Magiali better. Whatever people say. And you know, you could spend your lifetime and all of your energies doing that. And what does it get you? What does it get you? Absolutely nothing. All it does is it creates pain. It creates despair. It creates hopelessness. What's the greatness of Sarai Imenu? Life did not go her way in a very dramatic way. She can't have a child with the man she loves. She can't build a family with the man she loves. And now she is literally, her last option is to give her maid servant over to her husband as a wife. Now you understand, by the way, and it didn't work out, as we know. We know that because introducing another wife ultimately again into the equation never works out well. We have yet to find a biblical story where more than one wife actually works. Every single time it's always significantly problematic. For understandable reasons. You can't have two women vying for the attention of the same man. It doesn't work. But nevertheless, she is so ridiculously committed to the ideal. She is so ridiculously committed to the notion of building a people that whatever has to be done, I will do. That is Sarai. And you know how to, you know how you become, you know how you go from a Sarai, which means my princess, to a Sarah, to a princess over many? It's when you have commitment, when you have staying power, when you're able to go ahead and maintain your allegiance to your ideals and to your goals, no matter how difficult the circumstances. Now let's go full circle. So what happens? What did Yerushalmi say? That the Yud of Sarah, Imenu of Sarai, is very upset because where does the Kadosh Baruch Hu decide to put the Yud of Sarai? The other side goes where? Goes where? From Hosea, ultimately again to Yehoshua. Now, so what's happening over here? What does that Yud represent? That Yud represents Sarah Imenu identity. That Yud represents commitment to an ideal. That Yud represents staying on the course. Stay the course no matter how difficult it becomes. You know there's something you have to accomplish. There's something you have to do. There's something you need to be. There's some finish line you have to cross. Get there. It doesn't matter how you have to get there. It doesn't matter how long it takes you to get there, how much effort. If you know you need it to be done, then you need to have the staying power to actualize your goals. That was the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu was giving to Hosea. He says, listen to this. Remember, what did Rashi say? What did the Medrash say? The Yud represents what? Call the name of God. Ka Yoshiacha me'atzos meraglim. Right? It's a strange phraseology. God should save you. Atzos meraglim means what? Means what? What? The council. Right? From the council. From the advice of the meraglim. Now, it's very strange, right? It's very strange wording. Because normally the way we interpret that to mean is that God should save you from what? Basically, I've always interpreted it to mean it's Kadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the negative report of the Meraglim. But that's not Atzos Meraglim. The counsel of the Meraglim is something different. What's the counsel of the Meraglim? So let's fast forward a little bit. Look at number 15. What happens when the Meraglim come back? And they tell Klal Yisrael, you know, it's interesting. Remember how they start out. The land is really great. The land is really great. But, you know, whenever you see that but, you know that something is coming. Land is really incredible, but. And what's the but? The people are very strong, the nations are very strong, everybody's dying. So what's their advice? What's their advice? Number 15. Vayomru ish al achiv nit narosh benashuva mitzrayma. So what's the answer? What's the atzos meraglim? What's the counsel? The counsel is, oh, you know what? Oh, it's difficult. It's going to be difficult. There's going to be work involved. I have to roll up my sleeves. Somebody's not going to deliver Eretz Yisrael to me on a silver platter. I'm going to have to schwitz. I'm going to have to exert myself. It may take me a little bit longer than I want. Oh, you know what? I don't know about that. I didn't sign up for that plan. I thought I signed up for the easy Judaism plan, which is the one where God delivers everything for me, does everything for me, and I just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. But now you're telling me that I have to do stuff? If I have to do stuff, nit narosh v'nashuva mitzrayma. If you're telling me then that getting to the finish line is going to be a challenge, you know what? I think we should go back. But Mitzrayim, what's in Mitzrayim? Servitude, death, no hope. Yeah, I know that's all there, but you know what? I know that. I'm used to that. I kind of got good at that over the last 210 years. I'm good at hopelessness. I'm good with no optimism. I'm good with not having any responsibility. That's Atzos Meraglim. The counsel of the Meraglim was not just simply that they spoke negatively about Eretz Yisrael. The Atzos Meraglim was that if Eretz Yisrael is going to be difficult, if accomplishing our goals, if actualizing our ideals, if crossing the finish line is going to be too difficult and too much work, then let's turn back. Then let's go back home because we're not ready to roll up our sleeves and work. And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu? Excuse me. What does Moshe Rabbeinu, what's the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gives to Yehoshua? I hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves you from that type of mindset. So how do you save Yehoshua from that type of mindset? What do you give him? You give him the Yud of Sarai. You give him Sarai Imenu-like commitment to vision. Sarah Imenu like staying power. Sarah Imenu is the paradigmatic example of what it means to have unyielding allegiance to life goals, to life ideas, and to life ideals. Sarah Imenu represents that I'm going to do what I know I have to do, no matter what the cost, no matter how difficult, or no matter how tumultuous or turbulent the journey may be. So Moshe Rabbeinu gives Yehoshua the bracha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from this Atzos Meraglim, and he endows him with the koach of Sarah Imenu. So now we begin to see what a profound name change this truly is. And by the way, we also now begin to see how Moshe Rabbeinu was laying the groundwork ultimately again for Yehoshua to take the people into Eretz Yisrael also. Yehoshua is going to be the one who tells the people essentially that everything is possible. If you put your mind to it, if it needs to get done and you decide it has to get done, if you roll up your sleeves, then ultimately again you will accomplish your goals. And of course, the contemporary message becomes very obvious for us as well. There are so many times in life where we make goals for ourselves. So many times we have aspirations, things we want to accomplish, things we want to do. You know, for many of us, this tends to happen sometime around the month of Elul or a little bit before Elul. But the truth is, very often happens throughout the year. I know I want to do X. I know I want to do Y. I know I want to change something about myself. And it sounds beautiful. I'm excited about it. And then what happens? Then I realize the amount of work that's actually involved. And then once I realize the amount of work that's actually involved, suddenly, well, maybe it's not so important. Or suddenly, maybe I could put that on the back burner. Or suddenly, again, maybe it's not the thing I should be working on right now. And suddenly we begin to rearrange our priorities. Why? Because we're afraid to work. Because we're afraid to schwitz. Because we're afraid to put in the effort. Ultimately, because we're afraid of failure. We're afraid we won't be able to accomplish what we want to do. And what the Torah is teaching us in this beautiful, nuanced fashion is that ultimately what we should daven for ourselves every single day. We don't have to add a yud to our names, literally. But every single day we almost add a figurative yud to our name. And we daven for ourselves and for one another. Ka yoshi'acha me'atzas meraglim. It is so easy to fall into the counsel of the spies and to say, nitna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma. Let's just go back to what we know. Let's just slip back into mundanity. Let's just go back into the regular rhythm of things. Let's not push ourselves. Let's not try to become more. And what the Torah teaches us is, again, the same way that HaKadosh Baruch, that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Yehoshua chizuk to do what he needed to do, to stay true to his ideals, to maintain his allegiance to the vision of Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And he did that by endowing him with Sora Imen of strength. That's the same strength we daven for each and every day. That's what we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu each and every day for us in our personal lives. Ka Yashi'acha Me'atzman. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, save us from the counsel of the spies. Help us to find the courage to maintain fidelity to our beliefs, to our ideals. Help us accomplish the things we know we need to accomplish. Give us the strength to roll up our sleeves and to do all of the necessary work to accomplish all of our life goals. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. This is the last class for the summer. So Mir Hashem, we will continue at the end of the summer. You'll stay tuned for the schedule. There's going to be a Mariv Minyan now in the base Medrash.